Hey there, loyal listeners. As you know, the Top Games podcast is made possible by Hardcore Gaming 101's Patreon supporters, who help keep this show alive by donating as little as $2 each month. If you were to join them in doing that, you would not only help keep the lights on at HG 101 Towers, you'd also get access to our super secret Patreon RSS feed, which is full of ad-free versions of this podcast with exclusive bonus game rankings. Here's a taste of what you've been missing. We're talking Plaque Attack for the Atari Video Computer System. It takes place in a human mouth. You're like a militant tube of toothpaste in a gigantic hell mouth full of molars. The incoming enemies, which are like, you know, candy canes and hamburgers, hot dogs, ice cream cones, etc.
I think if you get 35,000 points, you can send away to Activision and join the Plaque Defender Squad or something. They'll send you
they send you like an actual patch you can sew on your clothes, don't they?
What kids like came to school with like their like Activision patches on that didn't just get immediately just like bullied within an inch of their lives? Like,
I'm a member of the Plaque Defender Squadron.
Go to patreon.com/HG101 and pledge a couple bucks. That's patreon.com/HG101. Act now and be a hero.
Some, this is painfully obvious, but hardcore gaming means it ain't for the novices. The main source to brain train your knowledge, a lane maintained with a course aimed at colleges. To HG101, we give the honor, thanks to Kirk Alada, Xerxes, the host of Proper, as well as Satanga, Cal and Bobinator, Ogre Hart and others. Discuss and discover all the 47,000 games, and when they rate them, you can bet it's scientifically locked in position. Speaking of which, no system is obscure, and look, they wrote a book about it, go out and cop yours.
Hello and welcome to HardcoreGaming101.net's Top 47,858 Games of All Time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games that you nominate. My name is Xerxes, and I'm the show's main host and producer, and on this podcast we have three rules. Rule 1, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Rule 2, you can nominate one game at a time via 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. Those are the ones we try to get to first. You can also go to bit.ly/rankthisplease. and add a game to the slush pile and cross your fingers. We make no guarantees on those. Rule number 3, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, just don't nominate games you've already ranked. See the master list for yourself. It's at bit.ly/47kgames. That's bit.ly/47kgames.
Dogs Bower. Hey, Dogs Bower. Hey, Dogs Bower. Hey, Dogs Bower.
You must be with Tim.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Top 47K Games. Today we are doing Sunless Sea. Does it have a subtitle? I don't think so. I think it's just called Sunless Sea. It feels like a game that should have a subtitle, right? Like that. Like Sunless Sea, a world without sun.
Suppose you could call it like Fallen London Sunless Sea, because it's the sequel to, it takes place in the same universe as Fallen London, but it's not really a sequel, so I guess they just called it Sunless Sea.
I thought Fallen London was a game, but I totally missed on that. Yeah, so we're doing Sunless Sea, but our timing is not great. Recently, a very important member of the original team that worked on this game, has been accused of some very serious, deal to other members, I think, of the dev team itself. It's some very serious stuff. The way that they responded to it, that was basically, that guy is dead to us, and that they're not... That individual's not actually apparently profiting from the game anymore. We've decided to go ahead and do the game, Sunless Sea. It mostly checks out, so we are still doing the game. I don't know, support the rest of the dev team, because they recently made another game without the involvement of said individual. So the developer was Fail Better Games, the publisher is Fail Better Games. And it won't surprise you to learn that in that case, it's published on PC on February 6th, 2015. So, 4 years ago, but almost 5 now. I'm Carl. Sorry about the kind of more weighty intro than normal, but, it needs to be said. I'm joined by just one other person today, because apparently Boat Roguelike doesn't get the engines going around here.
I'm Captain Tex Alpair.
Do you call yourself that in the game? Because you can.
You can. The first time I just picked Captain because, well, the game was described as a game where you're a captain. So I just picked that. I think the next time I choose Citizen, just because it kind of feels nice to be addressed as like Citizen. I don't think I ever picked anything else. But you can pick a whole lot of titles in that game. Citizen Tax, yeah. Widely regarded as one of the best films ever made, as you will know. And yeah, you can pick all kinds of titles. I think you can also pick Sir or Madam, is that correct?
Yes, and it's, as I was kind of alluding to just a moment ago, it doesn't really care. You can refer to yourself as a Sir or Madam, regardless of anything else in the game. You can just be like, nope, call me Sir. It doesn't matter. The game will follow through on that.
Yeah. You can also pick the portraits freely. So you can be Madam and have a beard if you really want to, or whatever. It's kind of like an old computer RPG where you could modify your character, but the game only provided you with 6 portraits. So you were always kind of limited, unless you kind of want to hack your own portrait into the game. But that occasionally turned out to be a little bit difficult.
Because all the stats and stuff kind of just disconnected from everything else. So it doesn't care in any way. It's just kind of bits and pieces running alongside each other, which is a little bit like this game. We'll describe this game, because I've never, before having to actually physically play this game, I was aware of this game. I had never played it. What about you?
I did follow the Kickstarter, but it didn't support it. So the Kickstarter was in 2013, so it's quite a while ago now. I did play it during the beta because I knew someone who had supported it at the time. I didn't pick it up afterwards, but I did pick it up a couple of years later and then started playing it when it was pretty much the version it is now, at least, maybe with some adjustments. But I don't think the game has been overhauled a lot in the last couple of years.
No, I mean, that's no problem. The game is as I said, I described it as a boat roguelike. I want to say that's accurate. I wasn't really joking. You are entrusted with, depending on, well, irrelevant of your backstory, you get to command a boat that sails around the high seas of horrible, obliterated Earth that's full of Eldritchian horrors or something, and attempt to meek out a living and achieve a goal. You can pick your goal, or you can kind of let the game just dole one out, maybe. Or you'll just get a new one while you play. It doesn't matter. It's a boat game. I think it's like, to actually kind of narrow it down, it's like any number of those, like, top-down space RPGs you used to get on the PC. You know, there was like 100 of those, the ones that you just flew around galaxies and went from planet to planet buying and selling goods and getting into fight with, like, space pirates and stuff.
There were a lot of those. Wing Commander, of course, had some influence on that, but there were also other ones before that, like Elite, where you're just playing a guy who wanted to make it in the universe in general. You could trade, you could be a pirate, you could hunt pirates, stuff like that. And this game is a little bit in that vein.
Yeah, like, the main hook with this game is it has a lot of atmosphere, a lot of lore, a lot of writing. Pretty much all of the game is a light pen and paper RPG, sort of like a pen and paper board games. It's all this sort of thing where you just choose your own adventure book.
It's a little bit like one of those. There were a couple of those that were mixing in classic tabletop RPG elements. So instead of just having a book where it says, oh, you are in front of two doors. Do you want the left door or the right door? Go to page 16 or to page 27. It has some random elements, and some games were like that. But you could say, oh, you have to fight the snake, like roll a die.
We did Death Trap Dungeon, wasn't that?
Maybe. I don't think I've actually played Death Trap Dungeon. But yeah, it does.
Well, no, I thought the book was like a fighting fantasy kind of.
Oh, yeah, fighting fantasy. That's actually a good example. I was looking for that, yeah. It's a little bit like that. So it has elements of a choose-your-own-adventure game, or at least it feels a little bit like that, but you do have more than just click this choice or click that choice. So it's not a visual novel by any means.
This game? No.
Even though it has the amounts of text you would find in a visual novel.
It's quite a bit of reading, although it's also very strange. The presentation, I assume the more you play this game, the more it manages to make some sort of sense, but it's very, almost like non-linear, the way you can just show up at any of the ports and the information is just in like a, it almost feels like an old Windows interface, you know, like one of the, I don't know, like the Windows 3.1 95 sort of RPG type of games where you just, you have like a separate window that you just scroll through all the stuff and you just choose things. Cause yeah, everything's presented as just like a story that you kind of trade things that are in your inventory to progress pieces of it. You'll start in London, and so you click a little bit of flavor text with a to go see the Admiral, who will assign you things, and then the Admiral will give you like mission writs, and then those are in your inventory, and you have to actually go to those places to cash in the mission writ to then return to the Admiral to cash in the mission writ that is now being signed off, and you do that, and you go out on the town, and that sort of thing, which all takes up just a load of chits. Like, I'm talking chits like in a board game term, you know, you just get, like, different cards and different little bits of pieces of things to indicate that you have one of those or two of those, and you just trade them in for other things in the game, and all of your story bits are connected to accruing these and then trading them for other things. It's very abstract, but it does work. It doesn't kind of hide the, mercantile nature of how the various interactions in the game work. It's all swapping just stuff, basically.
Yeah, it does have a strong management element as well. So your ship needs fuel, of course, to actually move around. And you also need supplies to keep your crew happy. And there's also a sanity mechanic, because this game has Lovecraftian elements, so of course there's sanity. So you
it's not called sanity. I think they're very careful about that.
It's sanity. It's always sanity.
I think they call it terror, don't they?
That's fine. But I mean, that's just the opposite of sanity. You can either have a sanity meter that drops, or like a terror meter that rises.
I'm saying they call it sanity so that they don't get a knock on the door from the Chaosium.
Oh yeah, Chaosium is very very Sue happy. Eh, they might lean themselves too much, a little bit too far out of the window occasionally, but I'm not a copyright lawyer, so that's not for me to judge.
It's very clearly a sanity system, but they call it terror and it raises over time.
It does.
Really neat the way that particularly works. So once you've done all your harbor stuff and your management, and you've maybe hired a crew person or two along with some generic crew members who you'll never see, but they are a number on the screen and they make your boat go faster. You press the E button, or I don't know if it has gamepad controls or anything, but you depart from the dock, and
there's a PlayStation 4 version, so that definitely has controller controls. I never play games like this with a controller.
No, it seems like a PC game, so I think it's got like a keyboard worth of hotkeys, so I'd recommend the PC version above everything else, you know, since it lets you press M for map, and it's M for chart, which is confusing, but
yeah, but come on, it's a key you'd probably use anyway. Also, C is for crawling. I know this. I mean, obviously not in this game, but just generally.
I mean, it could be.
Well, you can kind of crawl. You can slow down your engines.
Yeah.
Which makes sense, because you don't burn fuel proportionally to your speed. So the higher your speed is, the more fuel you burn, but it's not a linear correlation. So you might have to do it occasionally to escape a monster or pirates, but generally there's like an optimum.
If you don't use two speed, it's so slow.
It is really slow.
It's really slow.
I think that's part of the idea, that you get impatient and burn your resources. And
yeah.
Then you regret it down the line. You always do.
I don't want to waste my time sailing around the seven seas of death. You get out into the seas. It's a top-down game, in case we hadn't made that clear. The story stuff is all just mostly reading and some portraiture and stuff, like little images and things. And some pop-ups, but the actual game is basically entirely from above, and it's reasonably drawn back, and you get to see your boat. The controls, as we said, are pretty simple. You can speed up, you can slow down, you can dock, and you very slowly just sort of sail along an uncharted region. Everyone else seems to have charts, but I don't think you get to start with any charts. I don't think you...
Yeah, everybody else seems to know what's up. and there are definitely places known. So occasionally you get a quest that says, oh, I want to go here. So they definitely know the place exists, but nobody seems to have an accurate map.
Yeah, because I'm...
Also means like that you can get one of those maps, which is actually good because exploration is one of the most lucrative things to do early on, a lot better than trade.
Yeah, like I was very confused because when I started the game, I immediately, you know, I picked up some, you know, stuff in Fallen London, where you start, you know, like, just drop off this dead body over at Dead Body Town. And I'm like, okay, cool. And I had no idea where that was. I got lucky-ish and found it. I think it was north, and I think I found it north, but sometimes the directions are certainly vague-ish. You know, they'll say, it's northeast, and I think that means literally anywhere northeast, north-northeast, northeast-east, or probably north or east. It just seems to be anywhere in a 90-degree sort of quadrant, just anywhere. That'll happen.
Yeah, I think it's part of the point, because obviously the game wants you to explore. It doesn't provide you with a map initially, so you have to unveil everything. You do get rewarded for actually exploring, and you also get a little bit entangled in quests, because they're like, oh, so this person wants me to bring this stuff here. So I've been there, so I could go back, but that costs me some fuel. So maybe I want to explore a little bit more in this direction here first, so I can get this stuff here, and I might get another quest. It's stuff like that, where things just keep piling up, and you constantly have to make decisions on how to manage your resources. You can actually fudge a little bit. I think you can burn supplies for fuel. You can also burn people for fuel if you really want to, which the other people won't like, naturally.
Yeah, so it's got a... The reason it has a terror meter is, I guess, not underutilized as such. You can... A lot of shit shack stuff going on with this one. Just, well, I'm going to have to eat somebody. If you run out of supplies, it will happen.
That's actually the scariest thing in the game, running out of supplies, because the monsters, so there's a lot of monsters in this game, there's also pirates, and the monsters are generally just things you know, but now they're really huge and want to eat you, like, you know, swimming cockroaches and like amoeba and stuff. To be honest, they're not that scary because you can just shoot them.
Yes.
And not only can you just shoot them, but they're actually, most of them are kind of bad at also trying to eat you. Especially if you start circle strafing in the correct angle, a lot of monsters struggle to do anything about it. They're just confused. They're like this dog that someone tied to a lamppost, and now it's just running in circles, and it's never going to get out of that. So it sounds a bit silly, but it also is a little bit silly, because it feels like a 90s first-person shooter circle strafing, which doesn't make any sense in real life, but it works in the game. And that's it just doesn't make the monster scary. Even they can be gigantic, like aquatic locusts or whatever, but if you can just shoot them, that just goes out of the window.
I know. I don't know if this is jumping ahead, but yeah, I found the sort of boat in combat stuff the least interesting element of this game, because it's either kind of number swapping and also watching the AI not seem to really understand how to do whatever it's doing. It seemed to get really confused when I just kind of got kind of close to it and then just kind of almost but not quite hit them. The AI seemed to really get confused about that and just always try and reposition itself away from me rather than, preemptively defend itself.
Yeah, the problem with the combat is that you do make a tactical decision. One is, okay, do I want to fight this monster? I might have to burn fuel to drive a little bit faster and stuff like that. And will I pick up enough supplies from the pirates I just killed to make it worth it? You do make that decision, but you make it before the combat happens. You mostly compare the numbers and you say, like, oh, my ship is damaged and we're low on supplies, we probably shouldn't fight this giant squid. But once you're actually in the fight, it doesn't really offer much of a challenge. You don't have to do many choices, which I kind of like, to be honest, because the combat was really difficult. The game would probably be a lot more frustrating. But at the same time, it didn't really feel like the monsters were much of a challenge. It's more your meters that you have to monitor, like your supply and fuel and terror meter. Not insanity meter, terror meter. But those are not that interesting. And part of the reason is that I have survival game fatigue. So I don't blame this game specifically for that. But whenever I open a game and there's meters, I always just slump a little bit and the game loses a little bit of its appeal. So I don't blame this game specifically for that. But these meters, I don't think they will ever be really interesting for me again. But I understand that they're there. They have to be. Otherwise, it would just be like a top-down shooter. And that's not what this game is trying to be.
I like the meters are good when they're running low.
Then they're scary.
Yeah, then they're scary. The monsters are kind of like less scary than the pirates for the most part. I think some of the really dangerous or fast monsters, like, oh god, it's this one, I'm in trouble.
Yeah, the pirates can actually shoot back.
Yes.
Which makes them a bit more scary than some of the monsters.
And they can be quick, so they can be hard to shake.
The pirates can also burn fuel like you can, so they can accelerate their speed. I don't think the monsters can do that. I think they have a maximum speed, and that's that's what it feels like.
And I think they lose interest, I think, if you manage to get to a port. I know they lose interest if you get to Fallen London, that's for sure.
You do have a safe haven there. You can actually do that in the start. You can explore a little bit like that by just staying in the starting area for a while. It's not the most interesting way to start the game, but it's somewhat safe. And it might be what you want to do, so you can actually scrape together some resources and then go on a longer quest, especially if you've played the game before and you've accumulated some resources, which you can pass down, and don't want to burn all of that straight away by
mentioning. The game is a roguelike. You die and you're dead, and the game cheerfully informs you multiple times that you're going to lose your first captain. Don't worry about it. It throws that up, I think, in the tutorial, and then a couple of other times. To an extent, you just have no idea what's going to happen, and you will probably die, and that's fine, because, there's a heritage system. I think if you make a lot of money, you can pass on a decent amount by sort of preparing for your own demise. But if you only manage to accrue a little bit, you'll only be able to pass down a small fraction of that usually.
Yeah, the gamble you have to do is you don't just automatically get a fraction of the resources. Instead, you have to essentially put them in a vault, I guess. So the resources you preserve will be resources that you don't have in your current game. So you have to decide whether you want to keep those resources and succeed or pass them down, but then risk maybe dying prematurely because you didn't have the resources to survive the game you're playing right now, which is actually kind of nice.
It does feel like you are quite resource-starved, I think, in this game, unless you get real lucky.
You can get lucky. Occasionally you can make a good trade. Generally, trading stuff doesn't get you many resources, but occasionally you can trade A for B and then B for C, and C is actually valuable. Because the other beginning resources, the ones you can trade, those, which I think is like mushroom moonshine or so, one of the starting resources, those are not that lucrative, but they're not supposed to be, because it's not supposed to be a pure trading simulation. You're supposed to go out and explore. That's what the game wants you to do.
Then you can pick up some of the more esoteric stuff way out in the further reaches.
Yeah. One thing I want to talk about is the Lovecraftian element of this game here. Even though this is not a straight-up adaptation of any of Lovecraft's work.
It's not a mythos game.
It is not a mythos game because it does not have a Chaosium license. Or it's based on one of the games that are just based on public domain Lovecraft stories without Call of Cthulhu on the box, because that is also a Chaosium thing. There's a couple of different games that adapt Lovecraft stuff. So there's the straight adaptations or adaptations that are very close to Lovecraft stories, primarily The Shadow of Innsmouth, that's very popular to be adopted. And there's also ones
the one with the fish people.
Yeah, that's the one with the fish people and the hotel escape and everything. Yeah, and then there's the ones that take Cthulhu more of a pop culture thing. So that's just Cthulhu hanging out with, I don't know, Mario and Sonic or so. So they're not really supposed to be scary.
He's supposed to be asleep.
Yeah, maybe, but, in any case. Then there's are games in the middle that invoke the atmosphere, but aren't necessarily straight adaptation. This game falls into that category. And the writing actually supports that quite well. The writing is pretty good. It might be the best part of this game here. The main problem is that the disconnect between gameplay and writing is fairly strong. And a lot of games struggle with that, and that's understandable, because you can write a story where someone loses their sanity, and which doesn't happen in all Lovecraft stories. That's a bit of a cliche, but it does happen occasionally. Or they get injured and stuff like that. But if you put that into a computer game, it all just becomes numbers. So you might at one point encounter a situation where like something bad happens and people go insane, someone just jumps overboard and stuff like that. So that's all nice and scary, but then you go back to the game and it all boils down to, oh, you lost one crew member and you lose two supplies. So just it's turned into hard, tangible numbers, and that just does not make it scary in any way. So this game here is not a hard horror game. It's not supposed to be like terrorizing like Silent Hill or so, but there's nevertheless a little bit of a disconnect between those two elements, the writing and what it actually means in the game. You might not have that in a visual novel because that would only be the writing. And to be honest, I don't have a fix for this. So I don't really say, no, what I'm saying
you're
is
just complaining.
Yeah, I'm not saying, oh, they should have done this and everything would have been fine. It's very difficult to fix that because as soon as you make the monsters killable and as soon as you add numbers and you show the numbers, then it all just becomes, oh, I lose so many resources, or, oh, I have this skill at this level, so I can probably do this. And it always takes you out a little bit. But on the other hand, that's also fun to play. You probably don't want a game where you're just pushed around. And
it's the ultimate Lovecraftian game where you just, the game starts and then your character dies at some point.
Yeah, but that would be more of like an interactive experience. It might end up being like one of those 90s FMV games that where you just don't have any meaningful impact and the game's over in 20 minutes, provided you hit the like on-screen prompts fast enough. And you don't really want that either, do you? Because Sunless Sea is a lot better than those.
Well, it's better than Terror Tracks. Is that your official
That is true. Even though Terror Tracks, Track of the Vampire, that game I think if you play through it twice and do both the endings, the main endings, I think it's still just like 20 minutes or 25 minutes.
Yeah, but it's all live action. I actually really like that. I love that one. It's
yeah,
so...
it's quite quite campy. And it does have its own charm. I kind of like those games. But yeah, I think Sunless Sea is still a better game. The game can be quite lengthy. You can easily spend hours in a session, especially if you're somewhat careful and you're a little bit conservative. And you have previously mentioned the slow speed. And this game is kind of slow. And occasionally
it's really slow.
It can drag a little bit between story segments and quests. And I think it's part of the reason is that you don't want everything to be too close together. You want the Sunless Sea to actually feel like a sea, not islands within like spitting distance of one another. But at the same time, it can drag a little bit.
You know, when you've mentioned this, I think at least a couple of fixes that you could have here, specifically in this one. You do have to control your boat the whole time, so you can't even zone out. So like you can't chart a course and say, go here, and the boat, you know, makes its own way gradually there, and you just got to keep an eye on it to make sure you don't get, you know, murdered by the denizens of the sea. And if you do something like you have the ability to talk to people on your boat, you can talk to your assorted crew members that you recruit, and you can upgrade your stats and stuff through them and things. When you do that, the game pauses, and so anytime you do anything, the game is frozen, which is useful if you're in the middle of combat and you're trying to work something out. It's kind of less useful when, yeah, you're going to be sailing across the sea for the next 5 or 10 minutes, and you just have to sort of sit there with your hand on the keyboard just to do little course corrections and stuff, and make sure you don't hit the various things that are hanging out in the water.
Yeah, I think other games that this game here is, maybe not directly inspired by, but that have a similar system that predate this, from the DOS era, they would usually have an element, not really fast travel, but you would say, oh, we're going to travel from town A to town B, and then the game would just roll the dice in the background. And then you might like, oh, you encounter bandits after 3 hours. And then, oh, you find an abandoned camp after 8 hours. Stuff like that. So you
Yes, it really doesn't want you to do that. It really wants you to watch the whole thing.
Exactly, yeah. So you obviously fast travel isn't really the point of this game here, because if you could just teleport between locations, it would probably become pointless.
Yeah, it would kill the atmosphere.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it does have... It is fairly cool, you know, as you're sailing through the ocean, and it's got very... you know, very atmospheric sounds to the actual musical.
The entire art design, like everything is kind of greenish. That looks pretty sweet. So they did put a lot of effort into that.
Yeah, like if it's your kind of game, it's definitely, you're going to be like, oh yeah, I love that. It is really slow, though.
You know what? This game here is Truck Simulator, but more lethal.
It's Truck Simulator, except sometimes aliens take the truck.
Yep. but it's mostly Euro Truck Simulator. Even takes place, well, not in Europe, under Europe. Yeah.
Is this over Europe? What is the deal with this?
The idea is that there are evil powers that drag cities into the underworld, and they dragged Victorian London into the underworld, and you're essentially in some sort of gigantic cave with the sea. And there's also other cities. There's the former capital of the Mongol Empire, and there's also a republic run by Satan, I think.
In this game?
Yes. Well,
you can go to Satan's Republic.
Well, there are other powers in the universe.
That's pretty cool. I put myself in a chair and went crazy.
That happens. Oh, you mean you went terrorized?
No, I think the final stat is like you go insane or something. Oh, you're crazed. Actually, it's crazed.
Crazed. Okay, so yeah.
You still at maximum terror, you become crazed.
Yeah, they got out their thesaurus and stayed like on the right side of the red line.
So, speaking of thesauruses, or I guess lists of knowledge accrued over time, where do you want to rank Sunless Sea, subtitle TBA?
It definitely has to go below FTL Faster Than Light.
Okay.
Because that's kind of a similar game, and it also has the system of you need to manage resources and you need to equip your ship and everything. But I think FTL is just better paced.
It also makes the ship-to-ship stuff part of the game in a much more
I think that's inherently
fashion.
More interesting. It is not super similar to this game, but they share the same niche, broadly speaking, and I think FTL is a lot better than that. FTL is also a lot higher. That's on 91, so it's really it's quite high ranking.
I think something with FTL, though, is kind of also faster than Light. Like, it's designed to be quick. It's a fairly punchy session.
Yeah.
You
can't call your game FTL and then be slow.
This game calls itself Sunless Sea, which does sound genuinely very slow.
It is.
You can't complain about that.
It delivers. It is. There's no sun, and there's a sea, and it's big. So it definitely delivers on that.
It delivered on everything that it promised me it would, and then probably something more.
Yeah.
I mean, this game, I will mention the critical response to this game was unanimously positive, I believe. A very well-regarded game.
Yeah. I still like this game despite all my complaints. But I think
it manages to be not light, but fairly light. It's just like, you can play it, and it kind of just does make some sort of sense, and if you don't understand all of the things that are going on, it doesn't really care. You'll kind of pick it up as you go, which is nice.
That's true. It doesn't require too much investment up front. Even your skills aren't super important. It's not like, well, they are important, but it's not like you die if you don't have this specific skill, at least on level 3. It's not like that. So,
and when you do die, you'll be most likely be like, oh, I really should have somehow gotten more of that. You know, like if you find that you need lots of lore or whatever the various stats are, and it's like, oh, I keep dying on this check that shows up all the time. Maybe I should find out how I get more of this stat. And when you have a 50% dice roll, it'll be, you know, it'll go up to 70 or 80 or whatever. And you'll learn a bit more about the best way to sort of lay out your crew and stuff.
Yeah. So I'm looking at somewhere around 300.
That sounds low.
Well, okay,
so
firstly,
really
we've
big,
almost reached 600
so.
Entries, so 300 used to be bottom of the barrel. But 300, that is now, what we have here is Batman is around that.
64, apparently.
Deja Vu, Police Knots, Snatcher, Kirby's Dream Land 3, Solar Jetman, Master
hey,
of Magic.
Esther,
exactly, and Herzog.
That
so
was
these,
the last time
not,
that we...
Yeah, these are not bad games. So the list is very long. It's going to reach 600 entries soon. So this is no longer bottom of the barrel. This is like solid middle. And there are also a lot of really good games on this list here. So the top third or top quarter is quite...
You know what? 292, we've got Kingsfield 3 US edition, which is a game I would probably compare to this one.
Because it's super slow?
It's super slow, and the world that it's in sucks, but... You don't want to live in the Kingsfield world. Everyone's just like slumped all over the place, and there's killer plants when you walk outside your house all the time.
That's
I don't know
true.
How anyone gets anything done.
They don't. I think that's a problem. That's why the world is like that.
Can't farm anything. Got eaten by Triffids again.
Yep. It's the opposite of the Heroes of Might and Magic 3 world, where nobody gets anything done because there's too much stuff everywhere. Like treasure chests.
They just trip over a pot of gold every step they take.
Yeah, it's impossible. So, we do have... Mm-hmm. I would say this is probably better than Star Wars Jedi Knight Dark Forces 2 because it's more polished.
The polish is important. I will say that this one does a great job of presenting a game that I probably wouldn't have considered to be something that you could make. It comes together very well. It's just a boat, a captaining game set in a Lovecraftian sort of horror world. It's fairly out there, you know. It's not something that you see all the time. I don't think, you know, there's some games that I guess were inspired by it.
There are some Lovecraftian roguelikes, but this specific game here, this combination of like roguelike management simulation, exploration game, etc., it's somewhat unique, and the production value is also really good.
Yeah.
I'm looking at putting this below Crystalis, but above Kingsfield.
Now that's tricky, because Kingsfield is good.
Yes, but I don't think it's as good as Sunless Sea.
Are you saying that this isn't as good as 289 In the Hunt, a submarine-based run and gun, essentially? Or what is it, like a pump and torpedo?
You could make that case. I actually think that game's not as good as Crystalis, but well, can't argue with science, so
that's what we're doing right now.
Yeah, I would be happy to put it above that as well. So I'm not super strongly attached. My limit would be... What would be my limit? That's a very good question.
Do you have a limit?
Well, there's FTL, obviously, but that's like 200 places higher than anything here.
Okay, that was a pretty high limit.
Yeah. So that's not a true limit. Maybe Batman the video game. So
Batman the video game. Yeah. That one's pretty good. It's a good punching things nest game.
It is. It depends what it looks is also there. Yeah, and Deja Vu. You know what? I could put this above Deja Vu, actually. Yeah, I'd be happy with that.
I'm going through it. I'm always looking here because I don't want to sell this one too short.
It is very good. You should probably check it out. But at the same time, the pacing is not that great, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that might be the thing that really pushes it for me is I think that you could have done the pacing better by sort of rolling in different things to the same time so that you weren't kind of stuck doing your management, then your boating, then your talking. You know, everything's in distinct pockets. It feels like that maybe could have been, you know, like, you know, the captain of a ship sits in their, you know, captain's thing and writes their papers in their, you know, in the cabin.
Yeah, while the crew is like manning the ship. That's true.
Yeah, like you don't get that feeling that you're like kind of captaining as much as you are standing at the wheel of the ship all the time, always.
Well, you're a video game character, so you just do everything.
You do everything always, and that's why you have to pause it all the time, why nothing gets done. One thing, I really like the way the terror system worked, by the way. When you're in lights, your terror goes down.
Oh, yeah.
That was cool.
You can turn off your lights to avoid some hazards, but everybody's going to get really scared.
That's a nice touch, you know. That's a good little extra touch that's in there. So I definitely... Yeah, we're already above Earth Siege, which I think this one's probably a little better than Earth Siege. Paradroid is pretty interesting. That's the Commodore 64 game where you just play a little robot and possess other robots.
Oh, that one. I thought it was a completely different game.
That's why I'm clarifying it. I'm making sure everyone knows what we're talking about. Yeah. You said maybe above Deja Vu.
Yes.
I'd put it above Independence War Deluxe.
That's fine, too.
Shout out to Joe Q for nominating Independence War Deluxe. A game that...
With Newtonian physics.
It's so cruel, that game. It's crueler than this game, and it's not even supposed to be.
Yeah, it's true. That game just... No checkpoints in the base game. Just saying it again. And then they added them with the expansion, but they didn't add them into the base game still. So they knew they committed to that.
I don't really like Super Turrican, so again... Okay. I'm happy you've got the Batman.
Yeah. How about between Batman and Super Turrican?
Let's put it above Batman.
Okay.
And the reason I'm saying above Batman is Batman is just Batman. It's a Batman game.
That's true.
There's literally new creativity in a Batman game.
They turned Batman into a stone cold killer by having him definitely unambiguously murder the Joker at the end. It is. In the film, it's kind of...
Yeah.
Yeah. He might punch someone, then they might fall off the scaffolding and probably break their neck. But in that game, he just takes a Joker and throws him out of the window.
Yeah. Like, no more sequels for you, Joker.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, stop kidding around, Batman. And then he shoots him. It's a good ending. I don't think that's what happens. What the hell happens at the end of that game? I blacked out.
I think you just defeat the Joker and Batman just outright kills the Joker.
That's really good, but that's so out of character that it's going to go... It's got to go above that. I can't... No. I don't want to put this above Parasol Stars, you know? That's such a...
That's okay.
That's the happiest game ever made. I don't want to...
It is. It's the polar opposite of this one here, probably.
Yes, it is absolutely the complete opposite. And to be honest, I'm not putting this above Battlezone 1998. There's no way. There's no way. That's that. I'm going to keep it below Parasol Stars at 277. I don't think you're disagreeing here.
Nope, I'm fine with that.
Okay, well, we're locking that in. Sunless Sea, it's less esoteric than you'd think, so you probably would like it. I haven't played Sunless Skies. Is that better?
That is the sequel, which I haven't played, so I can't tell you.
Okay, well, maybe play that one. It might fix the problems with this one. Maybe we'll revisit it. Good night.
That's all for this episode. Special thanks goes out to our lovely co-hosts and compatriots, our theme song MC Norm, check him out at Normally Retro on Twitter, and our technical assistant, video editor, and scriptwriter Ed Burns. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101. I know I did. By subscribing to the HG101 YouTube channel, and by following at GC9X and at HG_101 on Twitter. You can also hang out with us at our Discord channel. It's at bit.ly/HG Discord. But most importantly, help us spread the love of games by getting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a 5-star review. Do it because you like us and you want us to succeed. Until next time, keep keeping it real.